Today's podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. Allergy season is here, and that means one thing. You need the Thunderstorm. Save on their lowest price with code word Howie at EdenPure.com.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. Thank you all so much for joining me today. I so appreciate it. We are going to get into a lot of stories here, but first we have some callers who have been waiting quite some time. Kim, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Kim.
Grace, this is Kim from Pittsburgh, PA.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, I listen to you all the time, but I wanted to let you know what happened. We are run by Governor Tommy Wolf, the Democrat, who told us yesterday we were going to have the mask mandate lifted. Well, he changed his mind mid-speech. He said, oh, restaurants and bars could be open, but the mask mandate is still in effect. We were like, what? So yesterday I went to my Home Depot across the street, and there was a sign that says, take off your mask. We're not listening to Governor Tommy. And everybody popped off their masks.
Yeah, I think...
And, you know.
So, Kim, that actually brings up a really good question, which I now that I think about it, I should ask the questions on air that I ask people in my daily life because, you know, then maybe I'll feel better about it. I do keep asking people, and I don't know. Some people are so confident when I ask them this. I say, do you think they're going to do this again? You know, and people say, oh, no, I don't think they could. I don't think they could. People are so over this. People are so fed up. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, but... You know, maybe they will. I don't know. I don't know that if the next time there's an uptick, if Baker and Murphy and Cuomo and Whitmer, if they all start getting the band back together and kind of trying this out again. What do you think, Kim?
We were closed down. The restaurants were closed. The bars are closed. And yesterday he said, oh, we're going to open them, but the mask mandate still in effect. And we're like, what? We thought he was going to say, guess what? Take off those masks. You don't need them anymore. And mask mandate in churches, temples, synagogues in Pennsylvania. A lot of us wish we were in Florida or in Massachusetts than
yeah.
Pennsylvania.
Well, let me tell you, a lot of Americans everywhere wish they were in Florida or Texas. I actually have a great story on that as well, because turns out that the people moving to Texas and Florida, they're not taking their voting habits with them, which is great news. I'm all about the positive news today. But Kim, I appreciate the call. I don't know. I do think there's an element of defeat here. I think these people know that, you know, the gig is up, and they got to kind of move on and try to figure out something else. But it is tempting for them, Jared. They see people out and about smiling, and I think it really bothers them.
Oh, I'm sure they do, but it would be wise for them to just kind of back themselves away from this as the House GOP is investigating the NIH Wuhan lab grant. So more is going to come out. It's probably best to distance yourself from this as much as you can.
Yeah, you're right. And that does explain why everyone like Fauci, they're suddenly on their heels. They went from
You guys know? Oops. It's cool. We're good.
Yeah, they went from ridiculing like all of these people who had any sort of skepticism to now going, oh yeah, maybe there's a chance it could have happened. Who knows? So
like Hunter, oh, it might be my laptop. I don't know.
Who can say? can anyone really say? The world may never know. Yeah, I definitely think there's an element of that as well, but I just hope that they know. Did you watch the Bruins game on Saturday night?
I did, yes.
Talk about post-pandemic. Mm-hmm. I got tears in my eyes. I can't lie to you. I'm not a huge sports girl. Everybody knows that. But watching, especially like the big burly Boston men
yep.
stand up and just screaming and, you know, throwing their towels in the air. And then when Pastrnak got the hat trick, everyone's tossing their hats over. The place was rocking. It just, it made me so happy. I feel like Howie. Things that I had no interest in, I'm now going, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. I love it. It felt like New Year's Eve.
And all the videos of the bars tearing down the plexiglass and the bartenders dancing and all. Everybody, just remember this feeling, because this is what Charlie Baker took away from you.
Yeah.
And if he tries to do it again, push back. Don't let it happen.
And it did. There was a part of it that felt like a New Year's Eve party. But to your point, there was also another part of it that felt like people who had just been released from jail.
Like, yes, from the lockdown cell block M for Massachusetts.
Like, you're realizing how wonderful fresh air feels on your face and how nice it is to walk around without a mask. I hate when people say, and I get it, I hate when people say to me, like, I feel so naked without my mask, or, you know, it just feels awkward, I'm the only one without it. Stop that. You sound foolish. You're not naked without your mask, okay? You're free. So stop with the, and I hate the think pieces that are like, the world's opening up, but I don't want to. I love staying home by myself. Good for you. But I just hope you know that your little experiment in isolation has cost a lot of people their jobs, their mental health. Like, this isn't a good thing. Okay. So we need to stop trying to cutify, or what's the word I'm thinking of, Jared, where you try to sugarcoat all of this into like, oh, but there were positives. It's done. It's done. We're moving on with our lives. All right. Speaking of moving on with our lives, it is time for Journalism in the News.
And now, news.
Very fake news.
I see a lot of excellent journalism being done.
Give me the press.
I'm not sure, to be honest.
How can you ask a question when you don't know the press?
He said that journalists make up stories and make up sources.
As a journalist, I don't really like being the story here.
Very fake news.
And many of your compatriots had to change the reporting, and they had to apologize, and they had to correct.
This is a golden age of journalism in a lot of ways.
Mr. Biden, Mr. Biden, what flavor did you get?
News.
All right, so the journalists, they don't take any days off, even if Joe Biden does. And I have a lot of journalism to go through here. But I think the one I want to start with has to be Natasha Bertrand. She was on CNN, and she was talking about how Kamala Harris is not in charge of the border. Now, this was a classic mix-up, because when they told us she was going to be in charge of the border, the Biden administration told us that, we all assumed, you know, she was going to try to fix the incredibly record-breaking high numbers of immigrants swarming over the border. But how silly of us. She's actually trying to address the root causes, which, again, I say this all the time, but if she really wanted to address the root causes, she would turn to the man drinking orange Gatorade and eating cookies beside her and say, hey, why did we do all of this? That is not of any interest to her. So this woman, Natasha Bertrand, she's a White House reporter. I don't think that means she works for the White House, though. I think she reports. But by the way she's talking, she is Kamala Harris's PR girl. Listen to her explanation of the confusion over Kamala Harris's role. Cut one.
Was it going to be a border assignment where she was actually responsible for stemming the tide of migrants to the border and surging resources there and making sure that this was a more manageable situation? Or was she going to be focused more on the root causes of migration that were actually driving people to the border in the first instance? Well, Republicans kind of seized on that confusion, and they made it seem as though Vice President Harris was going to be the new border czar, that she was going to be responsible and be the envoy to the border and be responsible essentially for all of the problems that arise there.
You know, I used to get annoyed when they would say seize, but I'm kind of liking it now. I feel like the main character. Every story somehow comes back to us. Every story we play a role in, you know? Democrats can mess something up. They can have a gaffe. They can fall up the stairs. And somehow, it's always our reaction. It's the crazy fringe conservatives. It's never about them. And I kind of like that. I've always liked being the center of attention. So why not now? Natasha, White House reporter, slash PR person, goes on here to talk about the root causes. And of course, we're not just seizing, we're not just pouncing, we're politicizing. Cut two.
When her team kind of saw this being mischaracterized by some media outlets and by Republicans and questions swirling about whether she herself was going to visit the border in her new capacity, they kind of were dismayed by this because her role was always going to be focusing on these Northern Triangle countries and the root causes of this. And they saw her being linked to the border as a potentially politically perilous, assignment and task.
Swirling, dismayed, politically perilous. I like all these words.
So I have a question. If this was always her role,
right,
was to be diplomatic and find the root causes, why wasn't that said? Why didn't they say her role is going to be this?
Well, I kind of think that they did a little bit, but it still didn't make any sense. I mean, if you want to, again, you can say, listen, we're trying to figure out the root causes of this migration. But at the end of the day, what changed? What changed in January? It was a new guy who had told them to surge the border. That's the root cause. So that's the issue. Speaking of Kamala Harris, can we just play a little bit? She killed it at the commencement speech. I mean, you think Joe Biden handles a bad audience well by calling them stupid bastards? This is even more uncomfortable. These people, they make jokes, they don't land, no one laughs, and then they're thrown off because their trained SEALs in the media usually give them boisterous applause and laughter and guffaws, like, oh! So Kamala, it's not a joke, and she doesn't even try to make a joke, but she wants people to laugh at it anyway. And she's talking about solar panels and batteries, and she goes on and on and on. But I just want to keep in mind, and someone wrote this today, I think it was on Powerline, it's very hard to make jokes that are safe and woke enough for this crowd, so it makes sense that they're not funny. Cut 13.
Who will soon help convert solar and wind energy into power, convert solar and wind energy into combat power. And just ask any Marine today, would she rather carry 20 pounds of batteries or a rolled up solar panel? And I am positive she will tell you a solar panel, and so would he. The American people are depending on you.
So weak. I mean, even I know commencement addresses are usually pretty boring, but The Naval Academy, they must have been rolling their eyes to the back of their skulls. Like, you're graduating. You go from maybe hearing from Donald Trump or Mike Pence to hearing about solar panels.
I think the Navy secretary is in the back flashing the little blue light. Hey, it's time to get off stage. Let's go.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, let's wrap this up. It can't get any better. The frenzied real estate market is causing bidding wars across certain segments. Real estate brokers are holding calls for highest and best offers because demand is so high. How do you as a seller know if you have realized all of the money for your property and if you've sold under the best terms? You wouldn't hire a refrigerator repairman to fix your valuable car. So when selling real estate, let the bidding war experts for over 45 years sell your property quickly, contingency-free, and for true market value. Recent real estate auctions for Howie Carr listeners have attracted as many as 30 qualified cash-ready buyers battling for their properties. At the end of your auction, you will know that no money was left on the table. Remember, when you sell your real estate in the usual way with a broker, you pay the commission. But in a J.J. Manning auction, the buyer pays. That saves you, the seller, thousands of dollars right there. Whether residential, commercial, or land, J.J. Manning can get your property sold now. To learn more on how to get your property sold quickly and contingency-free, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or jjmanning.com. With over 16,000 sales and satisfied clients, You can be the next one. Call Charlie today at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com and get your property sold. We'll be back with your calls, 844-500-4242 and more from our incredible press corps. Don't go anywhere. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. I hope your day is running smoothly. We're going right along here, almost at the halfway point. Today's poll question is brought to you by Covfefe Coffee, making coffee great again. From the MAGA Dark Roast to their Drain the Swamp Medium Roast, Covfefe Coffee has it all. To order today, go to doyoucovfefe.com. That's spelled C-O-V-F-E-F-E, doyoucovfefe.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Should kids have to go to summer school after their COVID year?
No, absolutely not. I would not send my kid to summer school. I would let them relax and go in the pool and enjoy themselves and run around and be kids. And I would not want my child to be under the guidance of any of these teachers for the summer.
64% of the audience says no.
Good.
They should not.
I'm glad people are coming around to my side of this. I think I'm on the right side of this argument.
And no screen time, no screens for 2 weeks.
Jared is very anti-screen time.
Well, especially if you've been sitting on the screen doing the virtual learning, all that. Just rest your eyes, go outside, read a book, do something. Just
play some wiffle ball. We were big wiffle ball people. It's fun. Take a dip, go in the ocean. The salt water cures all. But yeah, you can't, I would not trust these teachers, and not to be mean to the teachers, I know there's great teachers out there, but these schools where they're being run by the teachers unions and now they're going to open up summer schools, it's like, I don't know, maybe give them a little break.
Well, I'm sure they get paid extra for summer school. That's probably an extra paycheck coming in. That's why.
Oh, yeah,
they
well,
collected the salary for doing nothing. It's like, I'll double dip like I'm a state hack.
Jared, they're not doing it out of the kindness of their heart, okay? I can tell you that much. For Biden, the White House is a Monday through Friday kind of place. This is by Kate Bennett from CNN. She says, since taking office 4 months ago, the president has spent more weekends away from the White House than he has stayed there, almost three times as many. Counting this Memorial Day weekend, Biden has been in Wilmington 9 weekends and passed the 5 weekends at the presidential retreat Camp David in rural Maryland. The numbers far exceed any modern president's weekends off campus at this point in his tenure. Joe Biden has always been the guy who goes home to Delaware, said another person who has worked with the president. The White House isn't going to change that. He has been away from the White House 14 of the 19 weekends he has been president. They say it's for him to get a weekly breather. Even if it's Tuesday and the schedule says he will be at the White House for the weekend, or it doesn't say he's going anywhere, in the back of my mind, I know he's not going to be at the White House, said another person who works as part of the presidential entourage. The worst is when the decision happens on a Wednesday to leave on a Friday, or even a Thursday to leave on a Saturday. And then, you know, it's CNN, so they have to spend the rest of the article explaining, just because he's not at the White House doesn't mean he's not on the clock.
No, this is all totally normal. This is cool.
He's always working, no matter where he is, said one administration official of Biden's habits, noting he spends a good deal of time on the weekend prepping for the week ahead or thinking on larger ideological conundrums.
Like tapioca or vanilla.
This is the Socratic part of this they're trying to weave in. He is by no means checked out just because he isn't in the Oval Office. Okay. Does anyone believe this?
Even in the Oval Office, he seems pretty checked out.
This is the craziest part. It says that he's uncomfortable living there because Obama used to live there. It's sort of like moving into your ex's place, said the source. It's actually nothing like that at all. When we get back, we're going to talk about student loan debt. Feel free to call in 844-500-4242. It is the Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio,
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. We have a lot more to get to. I just wanted to add on to journalism in the news a little bit here. There was two more things I wanted to read you guys. One is, you know when something happens and the media doesn't want to address what it is, so they mix up the headline, so you have to kind of think for a second about what they're even talking about. Well, that's what Ken Duffy did.
Classic mix-up.
This is Ken Duffy, and see if you can spot the problem with this tweet. It's been a year since the fire at St. John's Church during George Floyd protests in D.C. It's been a year since the fire at St. John's Church during George Floyd protests in D.C. Now, did the fire just happen? Did the fire set itself? Do we ever get to the bottom of that? Is that a detail that we might want to add in? Like, was it the Black Lives Matter rioters that started the fire? Is that important to this story? No, because it's 2021 and journalism is whatever you want it to be, of course. Of course. And there's actually one more thing I wanted to hit here for journalism in the news, and that would be Dr. Fauci, because he's in the news all the time, and now the media is writing up about how he's set to publish a book towards the end of the year offering his views on truth, his philosophy on life, and looking forward to a brighter future. Fauci's book, Expect the Unexpected. How he's going to love that title. Oh my gosh. 10 Lessons on Truth, Service, and the Way Forward shares his own experiences and lessons that have shaped his life philosophy. The book is compiled of interviews with the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and discusses Fauci's role in leading a crisis. Because you can't get enough of Fauci on your TV. It'd be so much better to be able to read about him and all of his thoughts and failed predictions in a book. Wouldn't it? Wouldn't you just love that?
I mean, I would expect a short story about Dr. Fauci, but a whole book?
A whole book, Jared. You're getting the whole book. And speaking of the media, this is, we know, we talked about the Wuhan lab leak theory. We talked about Antifa, all of these stories that suddenly, you know, gain credit through the media because they decide, you know what, maybe we can look into that. Hunter Biden's laptop keeps damning Joe, but most media just ignore it. The latest, of course, is photographic evidence that then-Veep Joe Biden attended a dinner with shady Ukrainian-Russian businessmen and even posed for photos with the unseemly guests. Of course, none of us are surprised, but it's amazing how this was the October surprise, you know, this story. And if the media, and there were exceptions. I mean, I'm reading this from the New York Post. They were a major exception. And there were other ones, Powerline Blog, Spectator. There were other people, Boston Herald. You notice I'm naming some of my papers here. But there were other people who looked into this. But I mean, far and away, there were less people who wanted anything to do with this, who wanted this story to be true. So they waited. They waited and they waited and they're still waiting. You know, it's really embarrassing. All right. So next up, I wanted to talk about student loan debt because this kind of plays into journalism in the news, too, because this story is just so ridiculous. This is from NBC News. It says five Americans on what $50K of federal student loan forgiveness would mean to them. A lot. The spoiler alert, but it's a lot. Around 43 million Americans owe $1.5 trillion in federal student loan debt, an enormous number with broad economic implications. Now, I want to add this in and say Joe Biden's been kind of strange on this one. Because with most other things, he goes all in. You know, he makes Bernie Sanders look kind of sane. That's how far left his policies are. But with student loan debt, for some reason, someone is telling him that is not a line you can cross. We can't get to that point. You know, you tell him, oh, listen, Pakistani gender hamsters need money. He'd probably send it there. But The student loan debt thing, he's cautious of that. I think he knows that it just doesn't fundamentally make sense that, you know, if you take out a loan, you have to pay it back. So naturally, his supporters, who should be pretty happy with his performance. I mean, if you're like a far left radical AOC type, you should be pretty pleased with what you've gotten out of Joe Biden so far. I mean, the amount of executive orders, the crazy reversals of Trump policy, you're getting your money's worth. You're getting a good return on investment as far as Biden's concerned. But they're spoiled brats at the end of the day, so they're mad. They still want this, and they're still mad they haven't gotten it. Now, let's go through some of these. Student debt has been shown to hamper small business growth, prevent young families from buying homes, delay marriages, and inhibit people from saving for retirement. Adults report feeling depressed over their student loan debt at high rates. I'm skipping around here. In the meantime, student debt is still affecting the lives of many people around the country. So NBC talks to five people. Stephen Mewa grew up in a working-class Irish-Scottish family in Philadelphia and is now a lawyer in Hawaii. His is a classic American success story, but it wasn't without challenges or debt. He graduated from Temple University into a recession with around $40,000 worth of debt. I wanted to better my life. I wanted to rise up out of the working class. Sure, I could have stayed at home and not gone to college, worked a $40,000 a year job, but I wanted more. And that's what he got. He was laid off from his first real job, and then he got a job managing a movie theater, and the interest from his loans just kept accruing. In addition to the student loans, he was also in sizable amount of credit card debt, which he described as the unsung villain of college education. He eventually decided, now this is where I get confused with these stories, okay? He eventually decided to further his education and enrolled in law school. So you're already accruing all of this debt from your education, and then you go, you know what? I'm going to law school. And I got to an extent, I get it. If your dream is to be a lawyer, you think you'd be a good one. But then this guy, Stephen, works through law school, goes to a state school. He now has around $190,000 in debt. He has to pay more than $1,200 monthly on his loans. And this is what he said about loan debt. He said, forgiving $50,000 worth of student loan debt would absolutely boost the economy in ways that are very difficult to calculate. I could live, really live. It would be a stimulus. But my question for the listeners is, would it be a stimulus if they gave it to you? Like if your kid decided to go into the trades and didn't go to college and just went right into working, and we gave your son or daughter who didn't accrue any debt $50,000, do you think that would be a boost to the economy? Or is it just a person who chooses to go to college and then to grad school and then to this and then to that? I think you give anyone $50,000, it's going to be a boost to the economy. Jess Garish and Ariel Atherley, both 28, met at Boston University and have been together ever since. After college, they both pursued master's degrees at George Washington University, where they now reside and work. Combined, they have about $278,000 in student debt, and together their payments total around $900 a month. And they say they're both first-generation college students from immigrant families. And then this part I notice is a theme with a lot of these stories. Jess says $10,000 doesn't feel like much, to be honest, especially because some of the interest on loans, that would barely scratch the surface. That comes up a few times. You know, when you throw out the 10,000 number for these people, they don't like that. They say it's almost like they'd rather nothing than the 10,000. Like 10,000, that doesn't even scratch the surface. You're insulting me with that low number. To get $100,000 wiped out would help with a lot of the typical life things that people want, such as marriage, a house, kids. With their loans in forbearance because of the pandemic, the couple was able to buy a car, something they couldn't have done with the hefty monthly loan payments.
So, okay. The loan is on hold.
Right.
So, you buy a car.
Exactly.
Why not save the money to pay off
the loan?
The loan,
right? You're thinking like a credulous boomer.
I am. I know. I'm awful.
You're thinking, Jared, you know, you're thinking like a fringe, icky conspiracy theorist.
That is true.
And a racist and a bitter clinger on top of it. Now, this is Gladys Villegas Ocampo. I wouldn't even begin to describe how grateful I would be if my debt was forgiven. Ocampo, who was born in Ecuador and came to the U.S. as a young child, says when the bills come every month, she has to choose which to pay. She will graduate with more than $50,000 in federal student loan debt and a monthly payment of $336. All right, now let's go down to Alicia Corby, took out more than $225,000 in federal student loans to attend law school. Her current balance is now somewhere around $350,000. To her, $10,000 would be like nothing, but $50,000 in forgiveness would put her in a better position, even if it was still largely going to interest, she said. $10,000 would be like nothing? All right, I'll take it. I'll take it. These are not private lenders. This is the federal government, and the interest rates are predatory, she said. I want to know what people think about this, because I can't be the only one, and Jared can't be the only one, who are reading these stories and going, wait a second, what? First of all, someone's got to pay for it. I mean, what is the difference once we get into just forgiving $100,000 worth of student loan debt? What about mortgages? What about credit card debt? I mean, there's all sorts of debt. This is how capitalism works. You take out a loan, you're expected to pay it back. I say that as someone who has loan debt. But, you know, you make a monthly payment. It doesn't mean you're going to pay it all off in a year or 2 years. But you set up some sort of system. But I think this idea that we can just forgive all of this. And I'm kind of in a position where if they did decide to do that, I wouldn't be that mad, because it would help me out. But I have to imagine other people who have paid off all of their student loan debts would be mad. And there's always this argument against that, like, oh, well, that's selfish, or that doesn't make sense. But it makes sense. If I paid something, why shouldn't you have to pay it?
And I paid off my loans. I would be furious.
And then what happens in the future? You know, does everybody get that? It's like with the vaccines. Howie Carr got the vaccine and just got it for free. But then I go in the next day, I get the vaccine, and I get a donut. Now, do the people who got the vaccine and didn't get the donut, do they get
a retroactive donut?
A retroactive donut, which sounds delicious, by the way. I don't know. These are all questions. Let's take a call here before we go to break. Joe, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, good afternoon, Grace. Excellent, excellent show. You know, this Wuhan inspection going on, I think it's a decoy, because after a year and a half, I don't care who you send there, they are not going to find anything. But if you read the Post this morning, they have pictures on Hunter's laptop of Joe Biden and some of the people from the Ukraine and Belarus.
Yeah, they're at that cafe in D.C. Yeah. They set it up like they were going to be talking about the food organization, and, you know, but it was a meeting to meet important people. They could all meet Joe Biden, and one of them sent an email to Hunter the next day saying thanks for setting that up, and there's pictures of it, but no one's interested. I do think that we need to get to the bottom of what happened at the Wuhan lab, but I'm telling you, you wait a year to really crack down. I don't know what you're going to find at this point. Wait a year to investigate? I'm thinking the scene might be a little bit changed up since when it originally happened. This was kind of one of those things you had to get in there as it started. Spring is in the air. Imagine the smell of freshly mowed lawn, buds on trees, and the thoughts that, well, you know what, guys? I'm changing this. Summer is here. Summer is here, and the best way to kick off your summer is to check out the Follansbee Inn on the shores of Kezar Lake in North Sutton, New Hampshire, my favorite lakeside getaway. Picture yourself waking up in the morning and looking out to the diamond reflections of Kezar Lake. Maybe you're going to hop on a canoe and actually check it out yourself, take a dip, or maybe just walk around it. Everything at the Fallens Bee is gorgeous. Whether you're boating, swimming, or just relaxing with a book, it's a great place to be. It's great for family gatherings. I've been there with my fiance. I went with my sister at one point. My parents have been there. They're going again with their friends. It definitely gets the Curly stamp of approval. Reserve one of their 17 unique historic guest rooms, each with a private bath. Honestly, I can't say enough about their complimentary mouth-watering breakfast. I don't even want to describe it because I'm hungry right now and it's really going to get me even more hungry, but I will. Whether it's the Eggs Benedict, the blueberry waffles, everything at the Fallens Bee is cooked to order. And it's by Dennis. He's a chef from New Orleans. He's phenomenal. So the breakfast will get you through the entire day. That's how good it is. Go to FallensBeeInn.com and book now because you deserve it. That's FallensBeeInn.com, spelled FOLLANSBEE. All right, we will be back. I see you guys lining up to talk about this. Am I wrong? Maybe there's a part of this. I say this a lot, but maybe there's a logic to forgiving $100,000 worth of student loan debt for people that makes sense. That's is there a way to do this where other people don't feel like they got robbed? I don't know. 844-500-4242. This is the Grace Curley Show.
You can call her late for dinner. Just don't call her Gracie. It's the Grace Curley Show.
Wearing a tiara when I came in here, because if you happen upon it, will you have Lady Pennyface retrieve it and send it post hence?
She's the epitome of class, style, and sophistication. She's Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Not going to waste any time here. We're talking about student loan debt. Former students think that if you gave them $10,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 to clear out their student loan debt, it would be a boost to the economy. And I wanted to know what my callers think about that. Let's go to Susan. You're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi. Hi, Grace. Love your show. To me, we're setting a very bad precedent here. Growing up, if I couldn't afford it, my parents taught me, if you can't afford it, you don't do it. And you forgive a loan, so now are these people going to go out and have huge credit card debt, buy a house they can't afford? That's not going to be a boon to the economy.
No, you're absolutely right, Susan, and I was talking to Howie about this earlier. My dad got into, I think it was BC High when he was in high school, and his parents couldn't afford it, and it was probably like back in the 1970s, it was probably $1,000 maybe, probably less. And he just didn't go. It wasn't that he went and then, they tried to pay it back and put their mortgage, their house. He just didn't go. And I understand that sucks. Like, that makes me sad. That's an opportunity missed for somebody. But I hate to say it, that's life. And sometimes you don't get to go to the fancy school. You got to pick the school that's, the state school. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you have to try to figure out a way that you're going to be able to pay it back. It's part of budgeting and being an adult. And I say that as someone who's paying off mine right now. Thanks for the call, Susan. Joe, you're next with Grace. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, good afternoon, Grace. Thanks for taking my call. For years, Obama pledged that if you went to college, you would make more money over the course of your career. If that's the case, why are we paying for it? And number two, these kids, not all their college loans had to do with paying for college. Some of them were personal loans that went towards other things like, eating and drinking and stuff like that.
Like room and
but
board?
I don't see, room and board. I don't see why I should have to pay for a college experience. And, you mentioned something very important about mortgages. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Joe, quick.
Oh, you mentioned something very important about college, the home mortgages. A lot of parents ran down and took out the equity in their house to pay for the college.
Yeah, Joe, hold on. We're going to keep going with this. We'll be back on the other side. This is the Grace Curley Show.